So how much touching do you do at networking events?
Oh, a fair bit.
Oh dear.
I'm one of them weird ones in the corner.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. Hello and welcome back to the RE of Marketing podcast, the RE of Marketing podcast, season 2, episode 7. All right, Steve.
What up? What up, listeners?
What up, listeners? So we've got today Fiona Duncan Steer coming in, who is a female entrepreneur, a bit of a Nottingham legend. So for all you people not in and around Notts, Fiona runs a network called RSVIP, which I think has been going 11 or 12 years, if I remember correctly.
Proper established, isn't it? It's one of those that's been around for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's and she's here to talk to us about the power of business relationships and networking and stuff like that. Because, you know, as we record this, it's almost November 2020, and it's been a weird year for networking. Because we've not been allowed to touch each other and shake hands. Not that we touched each other.
How much touching do you do at networking events?
Oh, a fair bit.
Oh dear.
I'm one of them weird ones in the corner. I like to touch all of the buffet to see if it's fresh.
Oh yeah, that's all right. So like touching buffets, I'm just, you know, thinking. I don't want to even think that. Let's get that out of my head. Carry on.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a hugger. Let's leave it at that. It's quite pleasant, isn't it?
Yeah. Huggers are fine.
Huggers are fine. Anyway, we digress. So Fiona's going to come in. We're going to talk about that. This is one of our longer form episodes. Steve is back in the house. We've done some rebites. Hope you like the rebites, people. And we've surpassed 228 individual downloads, which is...
I've not looked at it for the last few days, so that's... Oh, that's good news. That's really good news.
That is good news. I have nothing to compare it to whether we're awesome or not, but I'm just going with we're awesome and people like it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, does it, if it's awesome or not? If people are listening and are still listening, then that's great. It doesn't matter if it's 1, 4, 10, 20 of you, or 10,000. It'd be nice to get to 10,000. But if it's helping one or two people, then that's great.
That is good. So if you like the, we've just finishing recording this season 2, and we'll be back as me and Steve talking next year, early 2021 for season 3. If you've got anything interesting you want us to talk about, want our opinion on stuff, want any questions or want to comment or us to explore a bit more, something we've covered in the first 2 seasons or any of the rebites, hit us up. Let us know. All our links are on the link where you find this. You'll find it. It will be good. And we'd love to be even more useful in season 3, I reckon. Even more useful. Good. Right. I'm about to introduce Fiona. So I hope you enjoy it. And me and Steve will catch you after. Today, we're going to talk about something that's been with me a lot of my kind of professional life, and that's like the power of relationships and networking. It was my first boss, I think, back in
1840.
That said, you know what, Tim, your net worth is in your network, when I was a young, weird 18-year-old, right? And I've literally lived that till now, and I'm 42, 43. I'm one of those, right? It's a long time. Anyway, but we've got a real expert in that world here, and she's a friend of ours and a Nottingham lass, because we're from Nottingham. And they're about to, as we record this, it's the end of October 2020, and Nottingham are about to go into a tier 3 lockdown. Hawks. So Fiona, do you want to introduce yourself, say hello, and tell us a bit about RSVIP and stuff?
Sure. Hi, Tim. Hi, Stephen. Thank you for inviting me on here on your show. I'm very excited. This is my very first podcast interview as well. So, yeah.
Congratulations.
I know. But yeah, so my name is Fiona. I have been fully immersed in the world of networking and events and the PR and advertising world for the last 15 years now. I started out, my background's actually theatre design, so I've got a very creative background, and I kind of translated what I learned in the theatre into my events, really. So I very much like to operate in the way of creative stance on events and bringing the experiential and the experience to people through my events. So a very different way of doing it, but it seems to have worked because I'm still in business 15 years later, so I'm not doing too bad. So my background's actually sales and advertising. I used to work for a magazine, and then I decided to take the leap into self-employment in 2008. RSVIP was my business that I launched, and that is a business network that's actually based here in Nottingham. And we basically host what we call business network social events for business professionals from a wide range of industries, SMEs to corporates levels. And our events are very much of the kind of social element, a very strong social element within them. So we like to give people a good time so that they can relax into networking. And so that they can actually network. The idea is to actually create a platform so that people can network without realizing they're networking. And then also recent years, I've started to utilize the knowledge that I've learned through the industry to pass on and share that knowledge through consultancy, business coaching, writing, speaking, and training. So that's me.
Brilliant. It's like, if you're not from Nottingham, you're missing out, because Fiona is a local legend in that city.
Oh, well,
true. Like, it's, I don't know anybody.
I know about that, but thank you.
I don't know anybody that's not been or heard of RSVIP, which is a testament, I think, to the hard work that you've done for 15 years. And 15 years is a good effort.
Yeah. The brand stands, everybody knows the brand. It's one of those that if anybody talks about networking events in Nottingham, everybody talks about RSVIP.
It's really nice to know. And you know what? It's lovely to hear that from other people as well. And I think, you know, talking about brand identity, it's really important to have a strong brand, isn't it? And we know all about that. But it's really important to kind of have a catchy name or a memorable logo or a memorable brand that people will remember. But it's also what's behind that, I think, that builds your reputation. And, I have worked really hard to build the reputation of RSVIP in the business. And I think how you do that really is just by thinking that you're only as good as your last event. You know,
brilliant.
So that's kind of how I try and do it. And professionalism is one of my biggest as well. It's about, you know, it's you make a lot of friends along the way in business, but you've always got to maintain that professionalism as well. And people respect that and they remember you for it as well. You can still be fun and you can still be, you know, you can still be cool and you can still be likeable. But, you know, finding that happy medium between likability and professionalism is something that I've really always placed a massive importance on in business, and something that I always kind of pass on as well in my consultancy sessions to people when they ask me for advice in that kind of area. So, yeah, it's nice of you to say, but yeah, still working to maintain the reputation as always.
Would you say that that whole ethos and the focusing on professionalism, yes, you've done it for the brand as such, but would you say that you've done it for yourself as well? So you've got that switch on and off, because we all know that when we're self-employed, that actually it's very hard to switch on and off between home life and work life. So does it help you have that switch where you know that you're in work mode against non-work mode?
Yeah, 100%, to be honest with you. I think you've got to separate the two to a certain extent. Otherwise, everything all merges in together and it can get a little bit messy. I think particularly in the events world, my social life has actually become my events and has done for quite a few years, where because I was doing long hours, you know, events, it's quite relentless being in the events world. You're doing sort of long days in the office as you normally would anyway, but then you're going out to host an event in the evening. So you might end up doing 16, 17 plus hours. Days some days. So it can get a bit murky. And for that reason, you can get a bit and start to mistakenly merge the two together with your social life if you're not careful, especially when alcohol's involved. So you have to almost detach yourself from, you know, thinking actually, even though I'm at an event, even if it's not my own event, if I'm at somebody else's event, looking around the room, there might be my clients there, you know, there might be members there, there's potential clients, there's people of influence, you know, and they're all, Nottingham's a small place as well. So if we are in Nottingham, you know, you have to be really careful. I've seen it happen loads of times with people that are kind of, you know, they're at a business event, but they actually forget themselves and they forget where they are. And it can get a little bit cringe. So yeah, you have to be careful. And also for your own mental health, you've got to separate the two. So for example, you know, when you're at home working from home and remote working, it's really important to separate, okay, now I've left whatever room it is I've been working, another room, and I'm going to relax. And I think it's really important to do that. I work from a home office. I converted my garage 2 years ago. So even though I work from home, I class this as my office. It's a lovely garage office, if you like, but very professionally done. It's got a separate external entrance, so if I have anyone over, they don't have to walk through the house. It's got toilet facilities and all of that. So whilst I still work from a home address, technically, it's still my office. And so that at the end of every day, I can shut the door and leave it, and I can go into my living room and I can watch Netflix and I can relax, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've been a remote worker for so many years now, and you've got to have that dedicated space. It's been harder during lockdown because my wife's had to start working from home. So she's now took over the living room. So, you know, you know, hopefully she'll go back to the office soon. I shouldn't say that. But hopefully, she wants to continue working from home. So we're actually looking at getting the office adapted again so we can get screens into there, because you need to have that switch off time. You need to be able to walk away from it.
You do. I mean, what I somebody told me the other day that what they do is, because they work in their living room on their laptop and it's all open plan, when they finish work, they go out the door and walk around the street and then come back through the door as if they've left work and come through the home, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's a mentality thing, but it's really clever, but it's rewiring, isn't it, your brain to really think, okay, even though I've just been working in that exact same spot for the last 8 hours, you know, I'm going to leave that environment and I'm going to leave it for 5 minutes, get some fresh air, get a new perspective and come through that door again, you know, as Fiona or Steve or family man, or, you know, as me rather than my work and what I do, you know. I think that's a really good bit of maybe advice that I've...
Reminds me of a famous thing that Seth Godin spoke about for donkeys ago, right? About when he goes, because he hasn't had a team in an office for a bit, but when he goes to do his work, like his writing, he writes a lot, he puts on like a lab coat, like, because it makes him feel like he's put on a uniform to do the work. And he knows subconsciously that when he's doing work, when he's got this coat on, he's there to write, right? And there's been I think Neil Gaiman has done the same, like when he knows when he's got a certain jacket on, he's writing, and when he takes it off, he's all right because he's at home. And it's those little interesting...
Absolutely. It's really small, tiny things, isn't it? But it makes all the difference on your mindset. And mindset is everything, isn't it? As we know, like when you're a business owner and you're self-employed in particular, and you've got to really kind of, if you're wearing 17 hats and you've got to be thinking and juggling every day on different things, you've really got to be in the right mindset, or at least know what gets you into the right mindset to get your mojo going so that you can tackle those tasks. So we all have those days where we're wake up and we haven't got a boss looking over our shoulder going, right, can you do X, Y, and Z? And I need that on my desk by this time. We have to be accountable for what we're doing ourselves, and we have to make ourselves do it. And we've all had those days where we're either hungover or we're tired, or we're all talked out and all zoomed out and we can't do it anymore. We think, oh no, head in, hands on desk, like I really need my mojo, you know. And if we've got those tools to be able to tap into when we're feeling like that, and we also remember to tap into those tools to be able to go, right, okay, now recognizing I feel like this, what do I need to do to get myself out of this?
Yeah.
And it's taken me years, if I'm honest, to find those tools and to actually even recognize that I feel like that. I think that's the first step of it, isn't it? As a business owner, is actually realizing it's okay, I feel like this. And it's okay to feel like this. Don't give yourself a hard time if you are feeling a bit like demotivated or whatever, or uninspired, or you feel like you need a boost. And then actually number three is actually going, right, how can I get myself out of this and change things? Even if it's just for an afternoon, but that can go on for longer as well, can't it? It doesn't have to be just like, oh, today everyone has a bad day, but those bad days can turn into bad weeks, can turn into bad months, especially at the minute with what we're going through.
Yeah,
everyone's going through a really tough time. So I think mindset is, you know, absolutely everything. Going back to what we were speaking about how trying to manage your working day and separate the two, really.
It's those triggers. It's noticing those triggers. At the beginning of the year, I pretty much went into depression. For a good few months.
Yeah.
And I never recognized what was happening. Others around me recognized it, you know, wholeheartedly, and were trying to say, you need to look at what's happening. But because you're so focused on doing the job, trying to get things done, you put everything to one side until I eventually cracked. Mm. And it took me a good 6 or 7 weeks to even start to feel any bit of normality again. And I can recognize those triggers really easily now. Really easily.
That's amazing because, like I say, you've been on a real journey, haven't you, then?
Yes, massively. This last year has made me rather than broke me, even though I had to break down to become the person that I am.
Yeah, and that's so good that you can recognize that and that you've turned that into a positive, because that would have been a really, really tough time, one of probably the toughest times in your life, but you've turned that into a positive and you've almost analyzed it and recognized what, you know, certain things maybe triggers, like you say, and then you've done something about it and you've looked at it from a positive perspective now and saying that it's changed you for the positive. So
I think that's a trait of marketers or creatives in general. I think there's a lot of other people out there who might be who have a very analytical mind, who would overanalyze a lot of things, whereas in a creative world, all we're ever trying to do is get back to that feeling good again. We want people to buy from us. We want people to network with us. We want people to talk to us. We want people to engage with us. We want people to understand that messaging, whatever it is. We're all about putting on this performance as such. Yeah. And actually, those in the creative industries who are more likely to go through some form of, it is mental health, but, you know, depression, non-depression, even if it's just that I'm really struggling to get this job done today.
I'm
more likely to go through that because of the psyche that we have as creatives.
What it is, I always referred it, and entrepreneurship, right, which like people a bit like ourselves, but definitely like Fiona, right, who's been a real entrepreneur, has built something for 15 years, right, not just self-employed like us two, but it's a roller coaster, right? If you look at a normal week of an entrepreneur or a creative, it's up and down like a crazy roller coaster. But if you, what we've talked about before, Steve and Fiona, something you've said on, I want to unpack, is that change of perspective and professionalism, right? But what we do have as creatives is the ability to take a step back and have a change of perspective and going, actually, that was a mental week, but generally I'm heading in this right direction, right? I'm following the right course. And I think that ability to be agile in mind and change perspective of ourselves, of the work we do, is super important. And I think that's related to being a creative professional.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting talking about the creative mind in general, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I can't switch my mind off very easily. Even at night, I am thinking, my brain, my body switches off and I sleep, but my brain's still going. And it's almost like I'll fall asleep, okay, but often I'll wake up in the night with loads of ideas. And I know they say the old thing of keeping a notepad and pen by your bed in case you want to write anything down and all of that. And actually, you know, doing that does help. But I something that I have always struggled with personally is switching my mind off, those mind monkeys, you know, as they call them. And I've always put it down to being a creative, and I do overanalyze things, which isn't always a good thing. But again, I think maybe that is being a creative slightly as well, because I'm always looking at ways that I can improve stuff, or I'm always being inspired by stuff everywhere I go. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. We could do this there, or we could make that better, or how could we change this? Or, you know, and I'm handpicking people's, fusing them all together to create something new. And all of this is while I'm maybe sat on like public transport, you know, yeah. It's ridiculous, or in the shower.
Well, you've hit on a couple of recurring. So me and Steve, like we said, we explained to you, this is towards the end of season two, right? So we've had a few conversations together and a few of a variety of guests so far, and there seems to be morals and themes that come up. And you said a really good line earlier that I want to mention is, "You're only as good as your last event," right? And I think that continual improvement mindset, or the search for continual improvement, is such a trait of across the creative industries, right? I don't care if you're a designer, a marketer, an events person, doesn't matter, right? That need for continual improvement, that fact that you're only as good as your last piece of work. If you're an advertiser, right, if you're a copywriter, and you've got a retainer clients, for example, if you write a duff piece, that's going to be the impression they've got of you, right?
And that's what everyone remembers, unfortunately, as well.
Yeah. It's that. I think it's really important that you're only as good as your last piece of work.
Yeah, or at least that you set those standards in your mind that you are, because then you can maintain those standards, because you set yourself a goal, don't you, to always hit that every time. Like, you're setting yourself a goal based on the last event, so okay, now that I match that or improve it. So it's like you're setting goalposts each time, and you can matching, do that translates into any industry really, doesn't it?
Yeah, matching wouldn't be good enough though, would it, Fiona? You're always going to, that's the last one.
Exactly. Well,
I've got this thing that creative people are actually more like engineers than anything else. So engineers, even though they're very analytical and X does equals Y and, you know, all those different algorithms and things like that, which I just thoroughly don't understand. But they are never happy. Nothing is ever 100% efficient. They're always trying to chase that next bit. And even if they got to 100% efficiency, they'd be going, no, it can still be better.
Yeah.
So when we look at things like Concord, look at how quick Concord got us to New York, but then we took it down because it wasn't good enough. And actually, in the creative minds, we're what I call creative mindset, theatrical engineering, which is we're always trying to put on a show, but we're always trying to adapt to make things better in the background for the next
time. I love that, theatrical engineering.
Yeah,
I'm going to write that one down.
It's kind of funny, because when at the beginning when you introduced yourself, you talked about you was involved in the theatre design back in the day. It's like, all right, theatre design, theatrical engineering. Yeah. We're always trying to put on a show for somebody else, but we're always wanting to improve on whatever we've done previously.
You know what that reminds me of, Steve? You're for people who don't know Steve, which is most of you, I imagine, because he likes doing the work, not being frontline.
I'm the introvert.
he's a big cyclist and into cycling, right? And that reminds me of, I can't remember who said it, you probably will remember, but will it make the bike go faster talk? I think there's a TED talk or a famous talk. Is it Boardman? Chris Boardman.
Sorry, yeah, Chris Boardman, yeah.
But that again, it's the concept that Fiona alluded to of continual improvement, right? You're only as good as your last event, and professionalism, right? It's that drive to move forward, even though you're bloody good. Like, Fiona's been doing events for 15 years, right? She's bloody good at events, right? But there's still forward motion, right? There's still
always room for improvement, isn't In everything, I always see that. And I think because times are moving all the time, there's always changing. You know, you look at digital marketing and social media and everything, there's always new stuff being launched, or, you know, diversification happening and this, that and the other. And there's always things you can tap into, new stuff. We're always having to relearn, aren't we? Especially as marketers. And I think it's the same in the events world. And I think what happens in the events world and what I've seen over the years is a lot of people kind of catch on to the idea of, okay, I'm going to do an event. And they look at what everyone else is doing, because a lot of people are doing it all kind of very similar to one another in format. And then they go, right, okay, that's the way to do it. And they just emulate that and then they do it. And it's just like being another small fish in a big pond. Yeah. And they're not making themselves stand out. And I think as a creative person, or even if you're not a creative, you can use and tap into certain techniques to actually help you to develop new ways of doing stuff. And this isn't just in the events world.
I'm loving it.
If you just take the time to find a USP, you know, like one USP, two. I've always said, I haven't, with RSVIP, it doesn't just have one USP, it has 10. You know, it was SP when I launched RSVIP. I wanted to be 10 steps of every competitor that I might ever have. And I always wanted to have several USPs, because it's risk analysis, isn't it? You know, you have one USP, somebody else is going to look at that USP and go, oh, I'm going to do that now. What then, what sets you apart from them? So make sure you've got 6, 7, 8, 9 right from the beginning, and then it's going to take them a hell of a lot of time to catch up with you. By that point, you're already 10 steps ahead, and you're still developing, still launching stuff, still diversifying. You're always going to be ahead. It's exhausting, mind, but this is a good model to run any business on. And it's been all right for me so far. You can see why I don't sleep now, can't you?
But what that is, right, even though you're an events person running a networking community, right? What you're doing is textbook differentiation, and textbook differentiation super well, right? They're that's why I like this podcast and having a variety.
Is that what I'm doing?
Yeah, it is. I'm telling you, it really is. But it's a great example, right? An example of doing differentiation super well that can be learned by any kind of brand and marketer that's listening to this, is that mindset of differentiation, right? That drive towards differentiation being a competitive advantage in a space where there's a shitload of networking events, right?
Yeah.
A bunch. Yeah. There's loads. There was a time when we could do it in person, that you could go to two a day.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's a saturated market now, it really is.
When I was at the local college, I employed somebody just to go and network.
So oh, really?
At the time, I remember going to HR and asking for the position, and they went, no, somebody's got to be here between 9 and 5. And I was like, I don't care. All I want them to do is be at 2 network events a day, one at lunch and one in the evening. I don't care what they do the rest of the day. Because there were
that is brilliant, though, Steve. Yeah. And I'd say that's really forward thinking of you to do that, because years ago, I actually wish leaders in their industries, in companies, corporate, whatever, with their teams, I really wish that there would be positions created within companies that would allow just somebody would pay someone to just go out to networking events. And it's under the umbrella of business development, isn't it? You know, a business development manager would have that as part of their role. So it's not really much different. You know, a BDM has to be creative in their thinking, doesn't he or she?
That's the thing, but you can split up that BDM role. So I actually did is I split it into 3 different positions, and I had a cold caller, somebody who would take in the inquiries that were coming in and deal with them, but would also be the person who would go, if I went, oh, we need to get apprentices in at that place, go and get us in there. I had somebody who went around and networked 2 days, two events every day, 5 days a week, and also weekends if there were some. And then I had a third person who was the account manager. So once those people are on board, that person would then rebuy from you time and time again. It wasn't rocket science. It was just getting into all the leads that were available and then making sure that you nurtured them, looked after them and grew them.
You know what? People don't think like that. I mean, you're saying that as if it's like everyone does it, but they really don't. And that's amazing that you actually did that and thought of that model within your business and presented that to your boss and said, this is what I want, because not a lot of people would think, again, as creatively and as efficiently as this, really. That's in a really efficient way of managing networking. Because not only did you want to hire someone that was networking, you wanted to then hire someone that would deal with and manage all of the relationships that were made from the networking. Almost like a funnel. That's brilliant.
There's a good, like, we last year when I worked for a company, I was working with a commercial sales director who are, as you'll know, as a networker, they're an interesting species, commercial sales directors. And they had their team, right? And I always referred them, just to kind of get on their nerves, if I'm honest, as the marketing voice channel. So it's your job to go out and speak to the real, like, individual people, right? You're our voice channel. And they went, no, we're not. We're salespeople. I'm like, you're not. You're the voice channel of marketing. But it's mainly to annoy the sales director, if I'm honest. but the premise is that's a fundamental part of marketing, of developing business, of growing a band, right, is building relationships, of having the ability, no matter if you're online, like on Zoom, or in a busy networking room, or at a conference, on a stand, at an exhibition or whatever, right, to make a connection between the people who are you've got the audience of for a little bit, and the idea that you're trying to get across, whether that's a product, a service, an experience, right? It's that, I think, connection is the thing that every marketer of every type is trying to make.
Yeah. I think that's where it gets lost in translation, though, like you've said about different roles. And I think it's quite dangerous, I think. I don't know what your thoughts are on job role names in general. When somebody works for a company and they get immediately allocated a job role, not even a role, a name, a title. And it's almost like, right, your sales director or your marketing manager or your general manager, operating manager, you know, operations manager. And all of these things, they think then define them. And so then they live their job by that title. And it's a bit like, actually, you might have known a marketing manager, your friend might be a marketing manager, and their job role might be entirely different to what I expect of you as a marketing manager. Yeah. I'm not a massive fan of titles, because I do think people live up to them. And it suppresses creativity in a way as well, because it suppresses people to actually think, I could go think outside the box and I can actually do this, that or the other. So like you quite rightly said, Tim, like a sales manager or a sales director might not think that they have to do anything in relation to marketing, because it's not in their job title.
It's
really restrictive.
Job titles are very strange,
aren't
they?
With the job roles.
Really strange, because actually some people take ownership of that role title and they think, oh, I'm a salesperson, so I only do sales, which is, you know, that's a common one. That's one we most often hear, is sales. And it's the same for marketers. Oh, I'm only a marketing manager, or I'm only social media marketing, therefore I only do social media marketing. But actually it's the perception from the customer is where job titles gets really interesting. So why do we call sale executives, for example? Why do we call them sales directors when they're not actually directors? They don't hold any shares inside companies. It's because it gives that perception to the customer that actually they're higher and are more of a decision maker than they actually are. So job titles don't work for me on two fronts, never mind just the one.
But people are smart, right? Like at networking, if I know, like, there's a director of new business, like, I know they're a BDM, but they didn't want to put BDM on the business card. Right. If I know, like, other people know, but I think there's an interesting thing about case study about job roles. I think I might have mentioned it in another podcast, but there's the oat milk people, Oatly.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. They've got rid of their marketing department. They did a talk at the Cannes Lions Marketing Festival earlier this year about getting rid of marketing departments, right? Which at the Cannes Lions, which is like marketing Oscars, was a bit of an interesting tack. but they've got they got rid of the marketing department because they put creatives in every role, in product, in packaging, in delivery, because they wanted to deliver a holistic brand experience, right? And you can't do that from a department. You can't build that from a department. And I think that was brilliant, and they're probably a little forward thinking. I can imagine that's going to be adopted, right?
You know, they're taking away the boundaries, aren't they? And I think there is like so much segregation within job titles and job roles now. And a lot of people do think that it defines what you do within your business and defines them as people as well. You kind of get a bit judgy, don't you? If you see somebody's job role, you immediately think, right, okay, do I want to speak to that person or not? Everyone's guilty of it. And, you know, you kind of almost filter through job roles and job titles to get to the point of speak to them. And even people in networking will do it. And that's why when you're networking or when you want to see a guest list, for example, before you go to a network, you know, people want to go, right, okay, who am I looking for here? What demographic are going to be at this event? Let's have a look. Are these people actually decision makers? What's the hierarchy here? You know, because obviously with networking, the people do want to speak to the decision makers ideally. So you don't have to go through all the red tape and you don't have to go through the hierarchy of speaking to six people before you get to the person you want to speak to. So in that sense, for networking, it's quite useful. Just as a bit of white to see who those people, you know, what kind of authority, I guess, people might have. But it's still based on assumption from a job title. So how can we make this? I guess the question here is, if you were looking at kind of other alternatives, is how could you make, how is there any way that we could do this differently that isn't so judgy and that isn't so, you know, like, take, if we took away job titles, what are the alternatives? What are the options? You know, but, you know, I think obviously this is just the structure that we're in at the moment, isn't it, of business and companies in general. But I think that's maybe an interesting one to explore a bit further. It's probably a whole separate podcast, to be honest, guys.
Don't worry, season three will have the answer.
Yeah.
Season three.
Exactly. Maybe
that's an interesting question, right? We're on about, like, this title of this podcast is the re of marketing, right? It's about rethinking everything and reframing everything to do with marketing, right? And challenging what we know as the status quo, you know, like business. I've not had business cards for about 3 years because I don't like labels, technically. Right. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, but you can read that and you go, oh, marketing. Yeah. I'm not interested in marketing. I go, how do you know what I do though? Like, you've just assumed what it is, right? And when you were talking a second ago, Fiona, about job roles and expectations, it reminded me of an old trick I used ages ago when I was first in networking, where if somebody came up I didn't want to speak to, I always said I was in insurance. and they always went away.
No offense to anyone that's in insurance that's listening to this, but yeah. but you know what, I think everyone's got little tricks up the sleeve like that at networking events. And I think it is one of those things where when you're networking, I don't care what anyone says, if you were truly honest with yourself, a lot of people are there at networking events for one reason and one reason only, and that is because they're looking to get themselves out there and to generate new business for themselves. And, you know, we can talk about maintaining relationships, and I do keep it real with how I talk and what I do. And I do a lot of maintaining relationships, which is very important. And it takes all of these steps to get to that point anyway. So you have to do all of these things to get to the business part. But ultimately, the end goal of networking is to get business, to get new clients, to raise your profile with your business and to get it out there one way or another, to keep talking. Obviously, there are other reasons why people want to go as well. Maybe it's because they're new in business and they want to learn from other people. Maybe it's because they want a change in career and they're just feeling like they're in a rut and they need a bit of a boost. So they go to a networking event for inspiration, because to talk to other people that are like-minded or aspirational to them might give them a boost and make them think, you know what, I've just been speaking to this really interesting person, just something really interesting. That's giving me an idea now. So that's another reason why people will network. Maybe they're looking for a change of career, or they want to start a business and they want to learn from people. You know, the relationship building is obviously a huge thing, but ultimately it all comes down back to the end goal, which is what's that end goal? And we all have to be honest with ourselves, really, I think, in going, yeah, the end goal is because we want to promote our business and generate new business and new customers.
Of course, it absolutely is. But I think there's so many nuggets on our notes, Fiona. That I'm running out of directions to take the thing, but the show notes are going to be huge, people. You read the show notes, but I think
you hit
on a nugget, right? That is, what's the outcome of this business event, right? So to use another personal kind of anecdote about networking, I did some for a company me and Steve ran that did customer journey design. I looked for, went networking for a few months, like as much as possible, to meet independent business coaches and IFAs, like independent ones, because I know they'd work with the people who would need the thing that we sold, right, to look at referrers. And I know, like, a coach has 30, 20, 10 clients that might be in the situation that need my thing. So instead of trying to find 30 people that I don't know that definitely want the thing now, like, finding the person who comes before that, who knows that person, right? Yeah. And build relationships with them is a long-term, but I still get referrals now from those people I built those relationships with. And it's all about that business relationship and maintaining business relationships, no matter what trade you're in. I think that's absolutely the thing.
It is. And what you did there was very clever as well, Tim, because what you did was you effectively made a beeline for the connector. So you thought, right, okay, what organisations or what networks can I affiliate with myself with? Can I build relationships with, make friends with effectively, who have got their own network of my customer, who can open up their world to me, basically. And doing that is basically you make friends with that connector, that person that can connect you with those people. And they might have a bank of 50 to 100 useful people that are potential customers to you. It's a lot quicker than individually talking to those customers yourself, to 30 to 50 people, isn't it? So that's the massive thing that I talk about in my training a lot in my workshops, is to be the connector yourself and also make friends with the connector. It's just that word connect, but also the connector. You can become a connector yourself, and that establishes yourself in the market of being a really memorable, reputable, respected person in your industry and a leader in your industry as well, if you become the connector. So, you know, refer people, help people, introduce people, become the facilitator. And you might think, oh, well, I haven't got time for that. Or, you know, I've got enough to do with my business. I need somebody doing that for me. But actually, you doing that for other people will come back tenfold to you in the long run. And that is what networking is. You know, so yeah. Mic drop,
Fiona. Absolutely. Absolutely, mic drop. I think with probably that mic drop, it's probably a good time to end the podcast. You will have to come on again, though, because there's...
I've got about 400 things.
There's about 400 things to do.
Oh, I'd love to come back on, yeah.
But we'll have you back on in the future. But I love ending with a mic drop. So just before we end this recording, Fiona, let people know where they can get hold of you best and RSVIP and find out more. And we'll stick it in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. So I've just built my own website, crazily enough. I did it in my sleep, believe it or not. It's www.fionaduncansteer.com. And you can find me on Twitter at RSVIP_. And then Facebook at Fiona Duncan Steer. So most of my Instagram, Facebook is just my name, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I've really enjoyed it. Could talk all night.
Yeah, we could as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant, Fiona. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Fiona Duncan Steer. It was we're recording it in the evening of her time, so it's a bit laggy. So if you missed anything, please check the show notes, because she dropped some bombs during
that. She was awesome. I know we say this after everyone, oh, weren't they nice, weren't they great, this, that, but everybody who's been on here has been absolutely outstanding, and Fiona didn't disappoint at all.
No, I mean, we were alluding after chatting to Fiona after we finished the recording with her mic drop, and I was saying that I kept noting stuff down and circling stuff, going, right, I'll talk to this after this bit. And then she'd say another nugget. Like, I've got circles round, is there an alternative to job titles as a question? The word connection, right? Theatrical engineering, like the design of events and experience, right? You're only as good as your last piece of work. Dissecting professionalism, right? The future of events we didn't even talk about. No. How to, like, the power of changing a perspective.
Like, we didn't even, the whole thing of networking and COVID hitting and networking events being shut down and having to move to digital, didn't talk about that. Talk about any of the experiential events at all, didn't talk about, you know, Fiona still got into the conversation there about people coming to the events and, you know, there being one key element of wanting to do business. Does she like to see a good churn of people coming through the door? Didn't get to any of that, none of that. And I think we could have gone on for a good couple of hours.
We could have gone on, and we said to her, well, you know, when we're back round to doing more guests and conversations, Fiona should definitely come on, because she's, as I alluded to in there, right, Fiona is somebody you'll know if you're from Nottingham, right, and she's a true entrepreneur, right? She's built something herself through hard graft for 15 years to get to this point, right? Yes. You can't learn that. Right, that's a true entrepreneur. And we can all learn stuff from her, right? The stuff that she did about building her brand around differentiation, about continual improvement, right, is a lesson for all of us.
To be fair, Fiona should be running this podcast. Neither of us should be.
She'll probably get one now, and she'll do it better than us, and then we'll be out of a hobby.
To be fair, I'd listen as well.
I would, I would. Don't fire us, Fiona, if you end up purchasing this podcast out of but yeah, just a massive thanks to Fiona. And any final thoughts from you, Steve, before we wrap this one up?
I want to get Fiona back on. We've got one more to record of this series, which we're recording next week. And then people are starting to hear the first interviews that we did. That seems like a long time ago, Tim. But I've loved this whole series. I've loved listening to other people rather than just listening to you. It's been great. But no, by the by, you know, hearing people like Fiona, who is well renowned in Nottingham, and RSVIP is really well known, but she knows much more than just the things that she is well known for, and being able to untap that from her and pull that through. It's, do you know what? It's awe-inspiring to watch when you see people talking that way. Like we did with Michael earlier in the series, where, you know, he was making the money but wanted to have a change, where we talked to Fleury and she talked about bigger purpose-driven things. All of our guests, they're much more than what they are coming on to talk about, and to be able to talk to them about all those different things, I just find brilliant, and I love doing it. Absolutely love it.
And I hope that's the aim of this podcast, right? Because if you've not figured out by now, people, or you're new to the podcast, that if you're after practical, tactical marketing advice, it's probably not the one, right? I don't think we've ever mentioned Facebook ads or anything like that, right? We're not super practical, but we discuss and unpack and unthink the important stuff that will make you a better creative, a better marketer, a better brand, a better entrepreneur, just like Fiona is.
Yeah.
Good. All right.
See you next time.
See you next time, people.